Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Joined in studio with us today are Todd Agliolaro, the Director of Publishing at Catholic Answers, and Chris Check, the President of Catholic Answers, both of whom are able to pronounce the name of Charles Peggy and sound French doing it. Chris, because he can imitate Pepe Le Pew, and Todd, because he speaks French.
Peter Sellers.
Oh, Peter!
I got Sellers. All my French from Inspector Clouseau.
Oh, one of the greats, Peter Sellers. We're talking this hour. We're taking this Independence Day holiday as an opportunity to talk about the state of our country right now and its various crises, and try to do so from a Catholic perspective, and maybe shed some light on ways forward from this. I mean, to some degree, I suppose, and I'll get both of your take on this. When things get really hot, you just got to let them burn out. I mean, that is part of a life of a society. Sometimes people start burning stuff down and tearing stuff down. You just got to wait till they get over it, because they will get over it. No, nobody agrees with me. Okay.
Someone like Napoleon steps in and puts an end to it.
I gotcha.
Oh yeah, we were going to talk about the revolution.
Right. It has a. Do you think it's
Franco?
Do you think it's overly dramatic to be comparing the current state of America to the French Revolution?
No.
Oh. No, there's a lot of differences certainly, but the
principles that are informing the crises are very similar.
Well, they're anti-theistic
ideas.
Yeah, but in place of instead of a goddess of reason to worship, we have the goddess of wokeness or something now to worship.
Well, divorce was the new sacrament in the revolution. I mean, they celebrated divorces.
Hmm.
Yeah, there was a whole a rite of divorce that evolved during the revolution.
Well, you see, so if we're talking about the unrest in the streets, or are we talking about the decline of marriage, or in with regard to the revolution?
I think they're bound up in each other.
But certainly the French are better at unrest in the streets than we are. I mean,
they have a lot more practice at it. Yeah, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost seasonal with them.
I had a friend who went to his reward a year or two ago. Claude Polin, he taught at the Sorbonne. He was a philosopher, but his specialty was terror and the reign of terror in particular. And he shared with me accounts of ordinary men and women, a baker, for example, who in his correspondence describing his day, going into the central square, sitting up by the guillotine, watching 100 or so heads come off, getting the blood sprinkled on him, and writing about this, and I think this was a very good thing that I did, and this was my participation in the revolution. Very calmly, in fact, describing this activity.
We're doing that these executions digitally now, so that you get people who have if you get even a snippet of a grainy video of the person doing something that looks unwoke, then other people go on the internet and promote that as this. I mean, I guess the example, the par excellence of this, is those boys who were at the pro-life rally a few years ago, and then CNN, within a few hours of some video that was very deceptive being put on the internet, it gets sent all around, these videos of what looks like racist behavior from these boys, but was not in fact racist behavior from these boys. That is the fact of the matter. They were not behaving in any way other than a respectful manner, and it was totally distorted. And then it gets on CNN, and then it gets all over. And now suddenly, the person is, there's a kind of digital execution.
Well, it almost seems quaint. To recall that.
Yeah, can we bring back Covington, Kentucky,
right,
please?
Or it seems like a relic of a gentler age. Yeah, yeah. When we
that's
didn't
horrible to
burn
think
down
of,
people's houses for doing that sort of thing. Or
yeah,
or assault you on the street.
Well, we all what we are starting to see is the guillotine claiming Robespierre. So I don't know who the latest one is, Mark Zuckerberg. I mean, I don't know how many billions this guy has, and my heart doesn't break for him that he lost, you know, $8 billion in advertising or something. But you know, when the revolutionaries start to eat their own, as Ben and Jerry's is doing, or Honda Motor Corporation, or Coca-Cola, or you know, whomever it is,
and then,
or in fact, you know, this couple from St. Louis, who defended their homes with firearms when the mob came in, you know, broke down the gate. This man is a liberal. He is a liberal civil rights lawyer.
He's a civil rights lawyer, yeah.
Yeah. But it doesn't matter.
Well, so let me get to that idea of liberalism, because it's a very complex history of a relationship between the Catholic Church and liberalism in the United States. For there's a certain time in which the joke was made that the definition for the when the Catholic bishops would meet was the Democratic Party at prayer. You remember that?
Yeah, that's a joke about the USCCB. It still is sometimes.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So it's probably less true now, though, because I think there's a sense of disillusionment among many with the Democratic Party and with American liberalism in general, because things that are important to Catholics, like not killing babies, they failed us on. And so the question, I suppose, that's raging in Catholic intellectual circles is, well, was that ever a good alliance? The alliance between American Catholicism and American liberalism, should we have been more cautious? Now it seems like there's a growing sense of a lot of Catholics who are pro-life in particular adopting the entire kind of agenda of the conservative side. Thinking, well, this will be our alliance now. I know I was heading towards a question, and now I forgot the question as I'm going. Somebody help me.
I think these categories are increasingly difficult to use.
They're super fluid, and I was just thinking about four different distinctions already.
Yeah.
You know, just in the word
people
liberal.
Ask me my politics, and I say I'm a Catholic. Because as Todd pointed out in the previous hour, there's classical liberalism and there's the kind of revolutionary leftism that we tend to associate with the 60s.
And there's FDR liberalism,
right.
Which has kind of wholesome quality to it, and that I think was more consonant with the faith. And then there's a kind of super destructive modern progressivist liberalism that's right. Quite radical in its aims. And so you really got to be careful to define your terms in any conversation.
But it seems to me the liberals of a certain era, say the liberals of the 1950s, would have been defenders of free speech, whereas the radicals of today are the very ones who are attacking free speech.
Yeah, I think of that great now deceased lion of the left, Nat Hentoff, who was a pro-life writer, Jewish atheist, pro-life writer for the Village Voice, which is
I remember him, yeah.
The house organ of liberalism, or was. It doesn't exist anymore. But he was a stalwart to his last breath of that quite laudable old school liberalism that really did value freedom of expression, that really did value diversity, not in the qualified way that they use it today, but in an honest way. And there's precious few of those around these days, it seems.
I could see earlier someone like William Jennings Bryan, maybe, that you could potentially describe as a liberal, some of his economic policies.
Mm-hmm.
Having
a protectionist.
Yeah, but sort of a consonant with the church's desire to provide a living wage for the laborer.
But this current kind of censorship is not a liberal quality.
I can't believe I haven't heard a Catholic prelate make the argument convincingly that any association with the institutionalized left today makes sense in terms of the Catholic Church. It doesn't make sense
because of the marriage and abortion and
sex identity. I'd say that's largely at the heart of it. Yeah,
it's almost I would almost want to make a broad sweeping statement that the sexual revolution ruined American liberalism.
Yeah, well, you know who develops that thesis very, very well is an old friend of mine, an author named David Carlin, who is still alive, but was a New England Democratic politician for many years. He was a state senator in Rhode Island, and one of these blue dog Democrats of yore, who was very socially conservative, but believed in unions and believed in economic policy that put the market second after people, or at least that's the way it was phrased. And he writes very eloquently in a book that I edited years ago that Sophia Institute Press publishes, that the Democratic Party left him when it became the party of what he calls moral liberalism, and it started with abortion. And it started with the defenestration of every pro-life Democrat, at least on the national level. There may still be a Democratic state congressman or dog catcher or something these days, but they made a decision as a platform point to utterly reject diversity on this question.
When I was living in Illinois, I think you might have been there at the same time, there was a guy who ran for governor, Glenn Thoreau.
A Democratic. I voted for him.
Yeah, so did I. He was pro-gun, pro-life, and he opposed the teachers union.
Well, but I do think this gets us closer to a look at the roots of the current crisis, is that there was a liberalism in the United States that was not fanatical about the sexual revolution. And so it was able to be allied with institutions like the Catholic Church, and not just the Catholic Church, but other institutions that were, that don't just want to throw out traditions and be revolutionaries all the time. So there was a time when American liberalism was a comfortable ally, never a perfect ally, you wouldn't want to say that, but a comfortable ally for American Catholics. Then the sexual revolution, and it seems to me that we're getting closer to crisis when we start pointing to the sexual revolution, because the sexual revolution is about disconnecting ourselves from nature and doing what we want to do. The enemy is not really God. It's not the church. The enemy of the sexual revolution is nature.
The enemy is ultimately God, I think, Si. I think back to the English Cardinal Manning, a late 19th, early 20th century Cardinal Manning, who had a maxim that all human conflict is ultimately theological. And it sounds slightly glib, but when you reflect on it, it's not. And I think to return to the revolution as an analog here, they had to not merely do away with the monarchy and loosen up some of the institutions, but they had to completely sever themselves from France's Catholic past. They had to replace the Blessed Mother with goddesses. They had to replace feast days with new holidays of the Revolution, and so on. And that same spirit of self-determination, of radical self-determination, of self-invention, is rampant in the sexual revolutionary ideology too.
Here, by the way, we see we were talking about parallels at the beginning of the hour between the revolution and
it
France.
It goes back to Genesis 3, by the way. Everything does, of course. Yeah. I'm sorry to interrupt you, Chris, but ye shall be like gods.
Yeah.
That is the constitution for the whole project, whether it's the sexual revolution or the French.
Yeah.
Well said. I think Todd put his finger on it. Chris, I'm sorry that I have to take a break.
Go right ahead.
But I like when we find God telling us right from the beginning as you said, the third chapter of the book of Genesis, and you could go all the way up through the Tower of Babel. This idea of desiring to be our own gods is at the root of this. Let's take a break, and we'll continue that conversation when we come back.
Bringing you the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, this is Si. You really should be listening to our podcast, Catholic Answers Focus. This week, we have an interview with the Archbishop of San Francisco about the destruction of statues, particularly statues of St. Junipero Serra, the father of the state of California. And then we have Carlo Broussard on. He shows how modern claims that the Bible teaches sola scriptura are rooted in false interpretations of a few scriptural passages. Catholic Answers Focus, the best podcast in the world. Get it where you get your podcasts, or find out more at CatholicAnswersFocus.com. The claim to be the best podcast in the world has not been scientifically verified and is probably just bragging. CatholicAnswersFocus.com.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects home buyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register and co-host of Register Radio with Matthew Bunsen. Join us every week as we talk with the Register's expert writers and editors about the news you need to know and offer authentic Catholic insights on the important stories that impact your life. Register Radio, every Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern and Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern here on EWTN Global Catholic Radio.
Todd Agliolaro, the director of publishing at Catholic Answers, gets the prize for getting us right to the nub of the issue, that if we really want to get to the root of our current crises, it is replacing God with ourselves. That's the constant human temptation, and it is the temptation we are surrendering to as a nation at the moment. Without question, there is the desire that we be gods, that we get to say, look, I determine what my sex is. My Creator does not determine what my sex is. I determine what reality is. Patient investigation of the truth has nothing to do with it. I'll go so far as to say you see some of these acts of what are clearly a police officer resorting to brutality, and which happens. I don't mean that as an indictment of the police. I'm just admission of reality. That happens. And then you hear a prosecutor say something like, well, we're going to thoroughly investigate this, and then we'll be bringing charges where appropriate. And that is not acceptable to the mob. The mob says, no, we don't want a thorough investigation. We're not after the truth, in other words. We're after the neck of the person who did this.
We want his head. Yeah.
And it's a very dangerous temperament that we're adopting as, in some ways, the recommended temperament for the moment. And it is, once again, we're making ourselves gods. We don't need to do patient investigation as to what is true or false. What we need is violent assertion of what we demand, whether it's a demand for to define our own identity or it's a demand that a certain neck goes in the noose. It's the same desire underneath all of it that we make ourselves gods. Go ahead, Chris. I do have a question that I'm getting to, but go ahead, Chris.
Desire is the word, because in Rousseau we find, you know, because I desire something, then I have a right to it.
Yeah,
that right. Sounds like Nietzsche almost.
Yeah, and there is this. Okay, so here's my point. I remember what the question was I was going to get to. I'm not trying to promote liberalism or conservatism. As a matter of fact, I think that's a grave sin that sometimes happens in Catholic media, that we identify ourselves with a particular political regime rather than staying aloof of those things and allowing intelligent people to hear the moral arguments and make their own decision. If you're a liberal and you're a Catholic who loves the poor and celebrates the sacraments, and you're just as much my brother or sister as if you're a conservative and you do those things. I have no interest in that. But I do think this is where the question that I was trying to get at before. There was a time when it's perfectly – and today, I think, still, there's a respectable liberalism. There's a respectable conservatism. You could be a Catholic and go into one of those. You can't be a Catholic, I think, and have on the mind of Christ and be one of the revolutionaries of the current moment. That's what I was trying to get to and ask you if you would agree with that thesis.
I totally agree. I pray a lot of clergy hear you saying that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the impulse to sever the past, to sever ourselves from the past, and is found in this new iconoclasm that we have now. To get back perhaps for the last time to the French Revolution, it's not merely a convenient object of inchoate rage. There's something very, very purposeful and I think diabolic about, you know, not to say that there are some symbols of the past that are not worth revisiting in a rational way. I think there certainly are, and I think some people are doing that, but it's clearly gone well beyond that.
Well, we had the Archbishop of San Francisco on our Focus episode the other day to defend Father Sarah. But another place where I want to say, use the word literally. I know you're not supposed to use the word, but people literally said to me this. So they said, it's not about who he was, it's about what he represents. And I think that's wrong, because he's an actual person. And just saying, well, we're going to tear down the statues because of what he represents, that's, again, that's a commitment to being disconnected from reality.
You know, Si, can I just say, I'm actually in favor of keeping Sarah's statues up because of what he represents, because this is what he, this is what he represents. Now, first of all, if all Sarah had done was bring viticulture, the wheel, forging of metallurgy, rotation of crops, polyphony, monogamy. If that was all he had done, the concept of private property, which is something that the mission system introduced, now more successfully perhaps in South America than in California, because we're at the end of the Spanish Empire by this point. And then you know, the Mexicans come in and enrich their cronies at the end of it. But nonetheless, if that's all that he had done, then a written language, then he would be worthy of 1,000 statues. But Sarah does represent something and brought something, this thing that he represents, and that is salvation. He brought baptism to a heathen people living in darkness. Now, I can get away with saying that, I guess, on Catholic Answers Live, right, in front of a sympathetic audience, but what would happen if, for example, in the subsequent debates in the State House about whether we're going to take down his statue as one of the two representing California in the Capitol Rotunda, if someone had stood up and someone stands up and says he brought salvation to a heathen people living in darkness, because that's what Sarah brought. But right. But I'm only able to have this conversation with the two of you because we accept that salvation is
a
good,
value.
Yeah, is a good thing, right? Actually, the good thing.
Right. And here we get back to the principle that it's ultimately theological. And I think maybe some of these protesters are speaking more truth than they realize, at least intentionally. And I think this is reflected in the nature of some of the graffiti and some of the desecration that you're seeing of these statues, which don't merely reference what they want to do to the cops or something like that, or justice for the oppressed, but blasphemous things and references to God, references to the Bible, references to the church. So, some of them, whether it's deep within them subliminally or quite intentionally, do understand that they're not merely, when they say what they symbolize or what they stood for, not merely referring to what they imagine to be colonialism or that they brought disease, but they brought this thing called Christianity, which is this guilt-laden, oppressive religion that took them away from their superior, romanticized paganism that they imagined to be preferable. And so I think and maybe I may be projecting here a little bit, but it's
I don't think you are.
It makes sense, I think.
No, I can tell you that you are not. How can I say? Just in work that I've done here in San Diego with the Mission Trails Regional Park, which is the 7,000, 8,000 acre park here, initially inhabited by the Kumeye. Before Sarah got here, that absolutely is the narrative, that there was this sort of bucolic, peaceful people that who weren't sufficiently careful about their immigration policy, and
they should have had a wall,
right? Sarah and his Spanish allies came and destroyed that. Now,
well, some of the Spanish allies, I mean, they weren't allies of, but the Spanish and Mexican authorities did in fact attack the Indians in many cases.
Absolutely.
I don't want to elide that. I want to be careful about that.
This is mostly
for economic gain. This was not the priests who did this. This is the wealthy kind of exploiters.
You're absolutely right, Si, or something worse than economic gain, the satisfaction of
base, carnal desire.
Yeah, base predatory desires. Right, sure. But nonetheless, it's a thought crime now to say that bringing salvation to a people who previously did not have it is a good act. That what Sarah brought was superior to what they had.
Yeah, and it's not just what I'm getting at, and where I think my thesis is certainly open to testing, but it's not merely multiculturalism run amok. Not merely that they had this this perfect natural society that the Westerners came and ruined, but they really do hate the cross.
Yes.
They came and they brought the cross, and they brought Christianity, and something within these people wells up in disgust toward that.
So they have to say that the cross is the opposite, in fact, of what it is. They have to say that it's tyranny when, in fact, it's only freedom. Route to freedom. Yeah.
Hey, I can recommend the best movie made this millennium, Apocalypto.
I agree.
We were just talking about that. I just saw it.
Can we talk about that on the other side?
We'll be right back. Yeah.
Hello, everyone. This is country music artist Colin Ray. Do what I do and keep it right here on Catholic Answers Live.
Have you subscribed to the Catholic Answers Radio Club newsletter? This is Catholic Answers Live host Cy Kellett, and I want to tell you about our new weekly newsletter full of behind-the-scenes information and facts you need to know about the show. It's easy to sign up. Just visit CatholicAnswersLive.com and look for the newsletter sign-up box on the front of the page. It's a great way to keep up to date with what's happening with the show and see what's coming in the days ahead, delivered weekly into your inbox. Sign up today for the Catholic Answers Radio Club newsletter and see what you've been missing. Go to CatholicAnswersLive.com.
Everybody's favorite Catholic outer space delivery pilots return for their greatest adventure yet in the brand new graphic novel Weapons of War. Fresh from saving the solar system in The Truth Is Out There and saving the timeline of salvation history in The Big Picture, Brendan and Irk land in a magnificent domed city on Mars for what is supposed to be a simple shuttle job. But soon they find themselves caught up in a sinister assault on faith and freedom. Will Mars be lost to the enemy? Brendan and Irk's only hope for the flight is in the power of God's sacramental gifts. A totally new kind of Catholic resource for apologetics and evangelization, The Truth Is Out There series combines the visual excitement and quirky humor of graphic novels with solid popular philosophy and theology. The result is a series in which everyone from teens to adults can find accessible answers to questions about God, the soul, true happiness, and much more. Order your copy of Weapons of War today by calling 844-239-4952, by visiting shop.catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
I'm Gloria Purvis.
And I'm Deacon Harold. The Morning Glory team talks about what Mondays mean to Catholics.
Monday morning, 7 Eastern. Now back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. We've got a special episode for you today for the celebration of Independence Day weekend. With us, President Chris Check, the president of Catholic Answers. We don't actually call him President Chris Check. I don't know why I said it that way. It's just Chris Check, president of Catholic Answers. And then
I shudder to think what I'm called around here.
Yeah. Nothing bad. No, it's, you're not one of those like
mostly
ones
your
with yeah. And then Todd Aguilaro, the director of publishing at Catholic Answers, who's on a win streak. Man, you should see some of the new books that are coming out from Catholic Answers. It is not just the usual drivel. He has really brought up his – no, I'm sorry, Todd. Now. That was –
Thank you.
Wrong. No, really. But a lot of really good stuff coming out from Catholic Answers Press. You should check it out. I joke. I jest. But we're talking a bit about the spiritual crisis. We've gotten down to the nub of it. I think Todd has done a good job getting us down to the nub of it by pointing out that at root, the mania that is being experienced in our society, it's really a destructive mania, is a desire to displace God with ourselves, make ourselves I don't know if make ourselves gods as much as just put ourselves in the divine position as the definers of reality, as the ones who are ultimately in control. And that manifests itself I think the point you were making, Todd, if, unless I'm mistaken, that part of this tearing down, like the statues of the St. Patrick of California, that's what I call him, the St. Patrick of California.
That's good.
Father Junipero Serra. Because I don't want to exclude my own people. Like, I have this Irish background. It's not like the Irish were always Catholic. Somebody has to bring the gospel to you. And it's a good thing when they bring the gospel. It's not an imposition of some exterior thing. It's the restoration of what's good and holy in every human being, and it's always a restoration. It's never, but it certainly it comes wrapped in many, often the complexities of human history that and the violence that comes with that. It's all there. But what you were saying, I think, Todd, was that the tearing down and defacing of statues like those of the St. Patrick of California, Father Junipero Serra, has at its root really it an attack on God.
Yeah, well, it's more than one thing. I don't mean to reduce it. And even in the French Revolution, it was where they cut the heads off countless statues, and you can walk through France and parts of Switzerland maybe today and see their handiwork still. So it's a severing of the present from the past in this act of reinvention. But there is a kind of malice there too, I think, and it manifests itself not just in that iconoclasm, but certainly in the violent oppression that we saw of the church in the French Revolution, and the maybe somewhat whiter kind of as opposed to red oppression that Christians and Catholics are experiencing today, but it's still there. And that's my theory. I think that there's a, and again back to the desire to make of ourselves gods. And you see it not just in transgenderism, the desire to identify one's sex, but yesterday's issue, it seems, but embryonic stem cell research. I always thought that was the perfect example of that principle at work, where we go back to the very origins of life and we attempt to capture it and manipulate it and use it to serve our own ends, of course, resulting in much death. So it's something that's been around and has a number of manifestations.
I think we can go from white to red more quickly than we might imagine. I mean, it certainly happened in Mexico within a century and not so far away of right now, and in Spain. And it's happening in, you know, sub-Saharan Africa right now. So
right.
Can I counter? I agree completely, and I become, and I might have not said that a year ago, because I have this still kind of
it can't happen
faith
here
in the institutions, yeah, kind of thing. We were talking about the Benedict option, and Rod Dreher, one of the cleverest things Dreher ever said was the law, which he calls the law of merited impossibility. And it's the principle that says that can never happen here, but when it does, you'll deserve it.
and
we're seeing a kind of slippery slope with the amount of oppression that our supposedly free society is willing to tolerate of opposing viewpoints and people.
Right.
And it's worse in Canada, and it's worse in parts of Western Europe. And there's no reason why it can't come here.
It may, in fact, take some red martyrdom to stop the frenzy. We think of the Carmelites of Compiègne, novelized in Gertrude von Lefort's Song of the Scaffold, a wonderful little novel. I recommend it to all of our listeners. But it was when those nuns were finally led to the guillotine singing the Te Deum there that the people of France woke up. When Sarah's...
Well, you know, you can go along. A lot of blood can be spilled before people wake up, though.
Oh, for sure.
You wouldn't be too sanguine.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. I was going to say sanguine, but that's not the right word. No. But be careful about being too sanguine about it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say that, from that blood, watering the seeds of the faith, there's a story in the life of Sarah that takes place here in San Diego. He is not here at the time when there is a Cumier uprising and Father Jaime is martyred. Sarah gets word of it. He's up north, maybe Ventura or Monterey. I'm not exactly sure where he is at the time, but he said when he hears the news of the martyrdom of his confrère, he says, and now we will begin to have conversions. Mm. So,
yeah, I do want to point to you use the word institutions and your innate maybe desire at least to trust institutions. The French Revolution, you know, you can often the story of the French Revolution is told is that, you know, this outlandish kind of selfishness of the aristocracy summarized in "Let them eat cake."
Which
she didn't say. But the go to Versailles and you'll see that they weren't so far off about that, about the aristocracy.
Right. So there's that side of the French Revolution, but the side that is hidden that we don't talk about because it inconveniences our modern ideas is that there's a long period of the corruption of French institutions, of higher learning, of French philosophy. Of a deep and really nurtured, cultivated anti-Catholicism among the academics of France that predates this. So there's two sides to this story. And it seems to me that at some point here in the United States, we have to be willing to go, you know what? Those institutions are actually corrupt. And among them have to be the institutions of mass communication, news media in particular, and institutions of higher education. They are grossly and broadly corrupt, and we still pretend like they're reputable institutions when they are not reputable institutions. Or they may have a good reputation, but the reputation is fumes of a former time.
You know, Cy, we do shows like this, and then listeners say, well, what am I supposed to do? Well, here's something Catholic families can do. Don't send your children to a college or university where they are going to be told lies that turn them away from Jesus Christ. And by the way, you're paying for the privilege. Stop doing that. There are fine Catholic colleges where they can get excellent classical education and be formed for a very successful life, if that's your concern. And they will not be told lies that will turn them against the cross.
Yeah, I think everything flows downstream. You mentioned media rightly and higher education rightly. I think probably education is at the head of the stream.
I agree with that.
Yeah. And
which what you said, public education or
higher education?
Well, higher education.
And it's not
okay.
Just public. In fact, I would tack on to Chris's point, and he probably meant it implicitly, that when families are making these decisions about their kids, avoid those Catholic institutions too that have. That have become enamored and corrupted by worldly success and worldly ideals, and because they're in many ways more dangerous. You could go to a UC Berkeley, which is a public Ivy here in California, and probably if you're well grounded as a young Catholic person, survive with your faith and get a good education, because you kind of know what you're up against, and you can go in kind of with your fists clenched. Ready to resist what they're going to try to do to you. You go to, and I won't mention any names, but you go to, and we could all think of some of these Catholic, many of them with sterling reputations.
Jesuit pedigrees.
And yes, in different religious traditions that are just warmed over secularist in their approach. But your guard is down. When you're at them, if I had a nickel for every time I was told, not just with regard to colleges, but even secondary and elementary schools, but it was a Catholic school, I felt safe. But my kids should have been safe there, or I didn't have any reason to doubt what my teacher or what the brother was teaching me. And so there's a sinister aspect there as well that we have to be on the watch for.
Yeah, it's basic lying in advertising for these institutions. They want to rope in the Catholic parent with an impression of with a patina really of Catholicism, but it's not there. I would even go. So I've said this before, and I think any Catholic bishop who is not moved by the controversies and the crises in the Catholic Church of the last 25 years is a moron, if you haven't learned some kind of lesson from that. And among the lessons are, you need to be paying attention to your institutions. If I'm a Catholic bishop, at some point, I want to personally have a conversation with every school principal in my diocese. I want to sit down with that principal and find out, do they believe the Catholic faith or not? Because one of the things that's corrupting the Catholic faith of children is that they're going to Catholic schools where the principal doesn't believe in the Catholic faith.
And so he's
and so
not,
is, I'm giving them a kind of quasi-Catholic faith, which is actually more destructive than if they'd just gone to a public school.
Exactly.
Yeah. And if you have a principal like that at the helm, he or she is not hiring Catholic teachers, which is the one job of the principal, is to pick to pick a good faculty.
Yeah, exactly. So I think just as, if you want to say, well, we neglected the priest scandals, we are currently neglecting the Catholic principal scandal. It's not
that's good.
You're not imposing something, again, exterior on a Catholic school when you as a bishop say, I want to talk to every principal in this diocese, and if you don't hold the Catholic faith, we're going to help you find another job. You know, we're going to send you to an institution where your talents are, you know, fitted appropriately, but they don't fit here. You'd be better off having a completely amateur principal who really believes the faith than having a principal with two PhDs who doesn't believe the faith. And well, there it is.
I think that the church has made a grave error now several generations ago with respect to this specifically, Cy, and that is by insisting that Catholic school faculty, parochial school faculty, be accredited by the state in which they are teaching. Because the state accreditation means that you have endured courses in the latest fads, educational fads, as Chesterton says, that are younger than the children they are imposed on. And so they've endured training in these fads of the diabolical descendants of John Dewey or whatever it is, and know nothing about the subject matter that they are teaching, whether it's history or literature or poetry or whatever it is, but have learned all of this, or been indoctrinated in all of these methods. And when one bishop in this country says, I am going to do what you've just said, Cy, and evaluate my faculty based on their love of Jesus Christ, their love of students, and their knowledge of the subject matter, and their talent for teaching. And that's it. I don't care. In fact, I'm not looking for people that the state of Nebraska or Iowa or California.
Or God forbid, California.
Yeah, precisely, has given its approval to.
Well, this starts with the market for these schools, though. So it starts with us. It starts with Catholic parents. And as long as there are Catholic parents who have a lot of money, who want their kids' degrees or the school that's listed after their name to be one that checks all those boxes, and this goes all the way up through college. There's a reason why the most expensive, elite, well-regarded in worldly circles, Catholic universities are the ones that have kind of made a deal with the devil in this way, and they're the ones least to be trusted. But they're able to do it because we feed the engine by desiring that ourselves.
It's true. Right. And there are alternatives, but sometimes they're very hard to find. And especially, I think, at the primary and secondary level. Sure. When it comes to the college decision, if someone has gotten that far, then I think he or she can find a good classical Catholic school to go to. Or such a program within a larger school, like the Catholic Studies program that my kids went to at St. Thomas in St. Paul, Minnesota. But at the primary level and at the secondary level, parents are at the mercy of the local prelate in the decisions that he has made. And, you know, God bless Bishop Barron for recently calling on the laity to step up, you know, with the call of Vatican II. But the laity aren't the ones hiring the faculty of these schools. The bishops are.
Well, if we want to talk about positives, I think, Chris, you and I both—
Who said we wanted to talk
about— at the end of the first hour, I thought we said that. It seems like, at least anecdotally, that there is a kind of resurgence of independent Catholic schools founded on classical educational principles and orthodoxy.
A shout out to our friend Tony Bees up the road with St. Joseph's Academy.
St. Joseph's Academy is a great example of that.
Yeah, and then my friends St. Martin's Academy and St. Gregory's Gregory the Great Academy in Fort Scott, Kansas.
But you know what those people are showing? It's not impossible in the current environment to just provide a good, healthy Catholic education. It's not impossible.
It's such
just,
place. It's such
you
places.
You just have to be committed to it. You have to be committed to do it. And I got to take a break. I'm sorry. I got to take a break.
I have so many more good things to say.
Yeah,
though,
me too. I'll just
say them.
I'm just going to say them during the break.
Just turn the microphones back on after the break, right after this.
We're glad you're with us. Stick around for more Catholic Answers Live.
Do you love sharing the gospel and want to learn to be more effective? Join the St. Paul Street Evangelization Online School of Evangelization. You will learn to build bridges of trust and make disciples by befriending strangers, proclaiming the gospel, inviting people to the church, and praying with others. We'll ask for a pledge of financial support, but if you are unable to give, we'll give you a membership at no cost. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
He is honored by the church as a saint with the title of the Angelic Doctor.
Matthew Bunsen and the Doctors of the Church.
St. Thomas Aquinas wrote a basic textbook for young theology students that became the church's most famous guide to the faith, the Summa Theologica. It helped him earn the title Doctor of the Church. He died in 1274.
For more about the Doctors of the Church, visit doctorsofthechurch.com.
Our countries, our society is in a state of crisis, facing several real troubles. And we decided to take this time the day before Independence Day here in the United States to talk about the crisis that we're facing. I do think probably for our listeners around the world, the problems are the same. I mean, if you're in Australia, they're the same. They're just worse because, you know, you're Australians and you're... No, that's not. I don't want to insult them. Basic problems, essentially the same if you're listening in Great Britain, although they'll have a different feeling if you're listening. And even, you know, we just yesterday, a caller from Nicaragua, probably not that much different in Nicaragua, just the extreme ends of it will be different. We're all facing this. Well, I suppose a battle over what it is to be a human being, what it is to be a human society, who God is, and does God have any place in what we're doing, or is there any reason that we should involve ourselves in what God is doing as societies? All these questions are everywhere, in part because mass media has covered the earth, and so everyone's got the same Twitter feed, and so we are all. It's the same eight people bothering us all on Twitter. All right. I think they're doing a great job. But I wanted to end with to ask you two for some advice, because I am feeling, I'm going to be really brutally honest here. I listen to Catholic radio and I watch Catholic TV. And I am looking at the next several months of political discord in the United States, and I'm thinking that is going to poison our conversation in Catholic media, because I don't see the hosts in Catholic media always being disciplined enough to stay on message. I think sometimes we decide what we need to do is speak up for a particular political position, and that we have some moral obligation to do that, where I think we have a moral obligation not to do that. So I wanted to get your advice. If you're the host of a Catholic radio program, and you know one, so this is advice that will be applied. How would you deal with the coming summer and fall of discontent here in America? How would you address political issues? And would you agree with me that I have a basic allergy to it? I would prefer, and I wrote this in a recent letter to the Radio Club. I'd prefer to do a show between now and November in which not a single political question is answered. I don't want to do it. And I got some notes back from people saying you're a coward and you need to get with the program. Our republic is on the line. You need to be defending this great American experiment or whatever. So with all that thrown out to you, go ahead and advise a Catholic radio host, an anonymous Catholic radio host, how to deal with politics over the next 5 months.
Well, I would say two things. First, I think it's an entirely healthy instinct to want to retreat from that. When everything is over politicized, it can be a good thing to lean extra hard in the other direction, even if that's not the mean, but just to provide some balance. And it's just a healthy way to live. That said, when we have a duty to talk about issues, when you've got a duty to your listeners, and we've got a duty to apply Catholic principles to these temporal questions, my one piece of advice, if you could call it that, is to bear in mind and perhaps help elucidate for people the freedoms that we have. Chris said something earlier that I hear a lot and I don't really agree with, but I understand the thought. And he says that I tell people that my politics is that I'm Catholic. And I think he means more than this, but there is a temptation in some people's minds to do an end run around political labels simply by acting as if Catholicism were a political platform. But it's not. Certainly there are principles we must adhere, and sometimes those principles terminate in policy matters that are no-go zones for us. We can't, as Catholics, support the killing of unborn children in the womb. We can't support laws that promote it. We can't fund it, et cetera, et cetera. But there are many, many areas where we have freedom, and there are principles that when we apply them pragmatically leave us with reasonable disagreements among reasonable people. And I think it's important when we get to that stage to remember we are arguing on the level of pragmatism, and we're not trying to figure out who's the most Catholic in that opinion.
Cy, if I were the host of the greatest Catholic radio show in the history of mankind, then I would see that
you're talking to Dr. David Anders right now.
I am not. I know my friends on EWTN. Look, it's all friendly, right? EWTN, sure. Yeah. So you do find yourself, Cy, in a position of leadership, and it is and I am very glad that you're in it. Because I think that I know that you have the perspective, and that is a word that gets thrown around, but the perspective that begins with a profound love of Jesus Christ, and it's evident in the way you treat each caller who calls into the show, and your desire to leave them closer to Jesus than when they called. So if your peace is upset, and our Lord does not want our peace to be upset. He does not want this. He says as much, right? I give you peace. And not as the world gives it, right? So if your peace is upset, then it's going to be difficult for you to fulfill that calling that you are so beautifully fulfilling. So my counsel to you is to limit your intake of the noise, to be informed, and I agree with Todd, you cannot avoid these things. And by the way, our listeners expect it because they want they want the crises of our age interpreted through the lens of all Catholic thought from the beginning. So you have an obligation to bring this to them, but not to have your peace disturbed. So it's going to require on your part a little bit of a measure, how deeply you dive into this, but then also for the peace of our own listeners. I just go back to that Peggy quote from the first hour, Peggy, where he says, you know, nothing is as old as today's newspaper. Nothing is as new as Homer. There's a very rich tradition. And if it's true, it belongs to the Catholic Church. And we have so much to share over this program. And you are the conduit for sharing all those things. So I don't know if that's a counsel or a pep talk, but you're doing great.
I think a little bit of both. I appreciate it. I suppose at the root of it is we need to be united in Christ. There is no other way, really, to have to be united. I mean, there are trivial ways, but I have a great fear that we are just dividing up into camps, even within the Catholic Church. And I don't believe that's what the Lord wants.
Fear not.
Right.
All right. Thank you. That's Todd Agliolaro. He's the director of publishing at Catholic Answers Press with a whole bunch of great new books. And I believe he's got this fall coming out what will be his triumph, a book that will be his triumph. Is that right, Todd?
It's all in the author's hands.
And then the president of Catholic Answers, Chris Check. Thank you both very much.
Thank you, Cy.
And I believe you'd both join me in saying God bless America. I think
Amen.
It's all right
to
say God bless America.
Sing it?
Take it away,
I don't think
Chris.
We're going to sing it. No.
From the mountains.
Oh, here we go. All right. Yeah. Go ahead. It's a solo, man. This is not a chorus.
God bless America.
All right. God bless America.